Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Steph and this is the Don't Buy Her Flowers podcast. We are bang in the middle of both half term and the Jubilee Bank Holiday weekend in the UK. We have been jigsaw puzzling this week together so far with kids clubs and swapping kids with friends. But today we went to see Top Gun Maverick and oh, it was good. Obviously we made them watch the original first in preparation, but it just did not disappoint. I won't say any more about it, but I do feel about 103. Now I've looked up that Tom Cruise was 24 in the original Top Gun. Yeah, it feels like at the moment the kids are getting to an age where we're going kind of full circle. They're doing things that I can really remember doing. Like, the song came on the radio and it had the word sex in it, and Mabel, like, at that point hummed it, and I can remember Let's Talk About Sex and sitting in the car with my mum and going, let's talk about maybe, and I just feel old. Anyway, I have to let you know, I have partaken in a couple of gin and tonics and then remembered that I need to record this, so excuse me, but right, let's make this quick. We are continuing our fatherhood episodes of the podcast ahead of Father's Day on the 19th of June. If you go to don'tbuyherflowers.com, we have some really excellent gifts. We've got food and drinks and grooming products and books and socks and loads of excellent things. And you can put them all together, create a completely bespoke package for any dads in your life. For this episode, I am talking to Jimmy Famarewa. Jimmy is the Evening Standard Chief Food Critic and a judge of MasterChef and Jamie Oliver's Great Cookbook Challenge. He's also a husband and dad of two. And we talk about the balance at home, the role of dads, how it's changed, what he learned from his mum, who I should mention has appeared in a Don't Buy Her Flowers ad before, as Jimmy's sister-in-law, Nick, is our social media manager, who we love. We like to keep it in the family. I also asked Jimmy a few questions about being a food critic, which frankly sounds like an excellent job. And also whether they eat all the meals on MasterChef, which I've always wanted to know what happens behind the scenes. I hope you enjoy this episode. That's my dishwasher kicking off in the background. And I always love to hear from you. We're looking ahead to the next series, so any thoughts and suggestions, ping them to me at podcast@don'tbuyherflowers.com. Right, let's chat with Jimmy. I wanted to talk to you a bit about, I've got a load of career stuff to ask and loads I'm fascinated by what might happen behind the scenes of cooking food programs. With the family stuff. So what is, you've got two children.
What
ages are they?
Dylan and Remy. So they are five. Remy's five and Dylan is nine. Yeah, I don't know. It's always that weird thing. You always like compare, don't you? Like when you've got friends that have got younger kids and like they're further along, or people that have got three and it's like, but you've got a baby in the mix or whatever. Like it's always, I feel like we're in, I don't know, you always judge it by, what do you judge it by?
How things like
car
are?
Journeys. Yeah, how knackered you are, but holidays. Things like car journeys, travel, holidays. You know, you get those little moments where suddenly it feels quite manageable and it seems quite calm.
Yes.
And I think, you know, my wife and I, we do kind of register that and look at each other and we're like, oh my God, this is actually really good.
Yeah,
but you always feel like, you always feel like you're in the especially challenging and difficult bit of it. Yeah. And then when you've got friends that are kind of coming up behind you in terms of that earlier stage, you sort it is always hilarious that you're kind of like, oh yeah, we're the old veterans now, and like, you know, meeting friends recently that've got a 5 month old, and yeah, it's very strange. But no, it's they are five and nine, and so I feel think like those are good ages. Good spot.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah.
I've got 11 and a 9 and then a 4.5-year-old.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And the 4.5-year-old is still pretty hard work. Like, I think I'd forgotten, because everyone talks about terrible twos and like three-nagers, but four is still, they're still a bit nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Lego, God, he's suddenly into Lego men.
Right.
And Ninjago, which...
Oh, God, yeah.
Older one, I can remember, because I've got boy, girl, boy, and my middle ones, she's not so into Lego. But we're going through the same phases. It's like a deja vu. It's so weird.
Yeah.
And there's...
Yeah. Yeah, I can... Yeah, that must be... Yeah, 4 and 5, I reckon, as well. You know, there is still a lot going on. There's moments of calm, but you know Remy is, you know, very forthright and kind of rules the house, really. Like, but very different to their brother, in that like Dylan is maybe a little bit more like quieter in some ways and considered, very into Lego, very into Minecraft and things like that. Remy is born a boy, very femme though, like kind of, you know, kind of into flamboyant, kind of traditionally gendered female things, which, you know, which is its own sort of fun, amazing journey, actually.
Yeah,
it's been really nice to kind of have those different sides as well. But yeah, I totally know what you mean in terms of it just feeling like it's repeating, and also I'm just forgetting. I feel so bad. Like other friends, like look to you for advice, and what do you do at this stage? And I just don't know if we were just kind of like, if you're just kind of tunnel vision, or you do just forget, or if it's a kind of like survival strategy or coping mechanism, whereby you sort of let go of all that stuff when you get through to the next phase. So, and I always feel like when there are people that, you know, that have had a third child and almost reset in that way, I'm always like, you know, admire it, but also just kind of like, slightly relieved that it isn't us.
I was gonna ask you about the juggle, so the impact of having kids on the juggle with work and relationship and stuff like that.
I think it's been huge, obviously, and I don't know how prepared you are for it, like certainly like having children and you know, the difficulties, the balance, the stresses, the sacrifices that you both jointly have to make, and hopefully can like carve out a space where you can both feel that you are able to be professionally fulfilled, that you get breaks, and you know, and I feel like a lot of what I do, I could definitely be better at it, but a lot of what I try to do is just to like recognize when like Madeline, my wife, is just in need of a break, whether it's just like, you know, a day of it, or it's all too much, or it's getting too much with work or whatever.
Does she work?
Yeah, well, she's an artist. Yeah, so she always so actually when they were younger, she kind of worked from home, and she had her own business and kind of made children's clothes. Like, she had a little clothing brand for a while, which did really well. But then she's a prop maker. And so she worked in workshops for a while. And so she was freelance for a bit. And now we're in a kind of third new phase where they're both at school.
Yeah.
And we're both probably pursuing these kind of creative, you know, these long-held creative ambitions, and that kind of brings with it its own kind of stresses and difficulties, because, you know, I've been writing a book and I've been kind of so in that headspace, and Mads has been like a total sort of like had to live with this like book zombie who's kind of like just not really there and not really in the room but tries to be present, and she's got, you know, this challenge of doing a MFA, doing a fine art masters, and we're both sort of trying to balance that out, really. I guess from my point of view, I think the greatest thing about being self-employed and working from home and being on hand for a lot of this stuff is that it's adaptable. Like, I don't, you know, obviously the flip side of that is sometimes I have to, or I used to before the pandemic, I'd, you know, have to travel for work, and, you know, it'd be a little bit unbending in some ways, or if you're filming, it has to happen that day or whatever. Yeah, you can get kind of sucked into that zone. And it has been, you know, it was challenging to be writing a book and filming, you know, quite, you know, a big TV show, like for like 4 weeks, was it, towards the end of last year? This is Great Cookbook Challenge, the Jamie Oliver show. So that was like a new challenge whereby, and also you're kind of in this professional space of, oh yes, we need to like bring you in and you're the talent, and, you know, we'll send you know, taxi for you in the morning, and what do you need? Do you need a cup of tea? And then, you know, on the other side of it, like, you know, my partner is having to like pick up the slack and like, you know, really kind of look after the kids. So
Both of you, that's difficult, because then you walk in the door and you're like, well, I've had someone bringing me tea today. You're like plumped straight back into it.
Mostly it's guilt, mostly it's just like, I just feel it as just like, and yeah, and just like missing being part of everything, really. But I would say that thankfully, you know, I've been kind of properly freelance now, even though I've got the column for 5 or 6 years now, maybe even longer. Yeah, maybe it's like 7 years now. And that's just been one of the great joys of it as well, just kind of being able to sort of drop in and absorb things here and there. And they have swimming lessons on Friday nights now, and so that if I'm able to take them to those, like, you know, it's kind of just being able to be on hand to do that and not being answerable to anybody really but me is like a lovely thing. And it does feel like a real privilege, and I think you really recognize it when your kids are at school and there's World Book Day costumes, and like every other day seems to be a topic day or something. And there's all this stuff that you
so
feel like
remember.
Is coming at you. And yeah, and you sort of let slip maybe, but you do get a sense, or I get a sense of what a gift it is to be able to, you know, we live really close to the school. We can walk to school. Like there's all these little privileges that I think that are kind of in a lot of our lives that we don't really realize. And, you know, for it's a real gift to be able to work in this way, really, and kind of to be able to sort of be on hand for that stuff and feel that I am involved and engaged, even though sometimes they're like, oh my god, daddy, not you. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're getting it in the neck, like, not you again, or you're being played off.
Intentional, they do, because my youngest does it. If I'm not there, he is totally fine. If he knows that I'm in the building, it'll be like, oh no, I want mum. Or sometimes it'll be like, no, I want dad. And you're like, this, what is that?
Just like masterfully playing with your emotions and playing each other off. You'd think you'd be sort of over that bit, wouldn't you? But that is another thing as well that, again, possibly it's on my mind just because a really good friend of mine has just had a baby, and they're kind of like navigating those early stages, and you kind of start to think about what your experience was and the things that you saw or whatever, and the things that you noticed. And I do remember it being a real thing with like, as fathers, there are a lot of things to sort of hide behind. Like, you know, work is one of them traditionally, like, you know, whether your partner's breastfeeding, like, you know, you're not able to soothe in that same way. Oh, they just want you, like, you know, that kind of thing. And I have sympathy because I remember that feeling of wanting to be engaged, but feeling a little bit peripheral, but there's always something that you can do, isn't there? And I always am just like trying to say to like friends that are kind of maybe going into that zone, like, look, like, it's not really about, like, you know, you, and you need to sort of find a way to, and actually just in terms of connection with your kids, it's just really good to find a way to have those moments or have those little kind of like special things that are just yours, rather than just kind of waiting to be called into action.
That's such good advice though, that critical, because it's that there's stuff you can do, even though you might not be able to physically feed them with your body.
There's always
a wash to put out. There's always a wash to go on. There's always a dishwasher. And I think quite often I see as well with friends that I've known where the bloke might sit around and go, well, what do you want me to do? It's like, no. You've just got to find it.
Yeah. And I guess, again, this is very sort of case by case, isn't it? Like some people's relationships are very people have their zones and like encroachment on them, like sometimes like ceding power and sort of like letting go in some ways. And I think that that's also something that I see when kids get to school age and you know, and it becomes that kind of, oh no, where is this, or oh no, we do it this way, or this is how the lunch is made, or whatever. It's kind of the responsibilities on both sides, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, you know, kind of those, whichever parent it happens to be, the one that's possibly most involved needs to relinquish a little bit, and the one that's on the other side needs to kind of just, you know, grab the ball by the horns and step up and, yeah, get a bit more involved.
What did you, because you did an article on sharenting, so this is a while ago, but so you went, well, you did sharenting and also you did the Swedish model.
Your
eldest over to Sweden.
So I took Dylan to Sweden, to Stockholm, and this was just as the law change on shared leave was kind of coming in, moving towards a Scandinavian style model. And I kind of, it was a really fun thing to do. It was really like gung ho, because like Dylan was quite little. I'm trying to think, was he like two maybe? Or
I
maybe
think
like
from
just
the
about
article,
turn
he
three?
Was, he was about two, yeah.
Yeah, and teeny tiny. And like the backdrop to that article was like absolutely disastrous. Like neither of us really slept. We were just like raggedly tired and sort of, but it was such a fun thing to do and such a special thing to do and get to write about. And it was great to meet these Swedish men, who these Swedish parents that are like dads, who, you know, had taken, you know, 6 months more out of work at a time when that was especially like unthinkable in the context of like British society. And what was really striking, I remember, was that because generationally it had been instilled in them, like, you know, obviously a lot of them talked about the fact that when these kind of rules were first being introduced or promoted in the kind of 70s, maybe, like there was some pushback, a kind of like macho, you know, pushback. But I think just the insistence of the government and the way that they kept being creative in terms of, oh, you'll lose these incentives, you'll, you know, you get this, and kind of, I think it was just like social conditioning, really, to the point where I was meeting these Swedish dads and they just, and you know, I was there trying to write my article about these incredible sort of you know, highly evolved, amazing, like, like Norse gods that they were in terms of, like, you know, the sexual revolution and gender balance and stuff. But they just didn't see it as a big deal. They kind of just saw it as just what you did, as what was expected of them. And I guess that is kind of the battle.
Because there were more people around them doing it, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was just so commonplace that they just didn't really see it as that big a deal. Another thing that I've definitely recognised, which may seem a little bit ridiculous and pathetic, is that men, they can just feel really isolated, like kind of like they're sort of left out, and like no one really, like I was speaking to like a dad recently, and yeah, he's quite often at the school gates and does a lot of the pickup and stuff, because I think his partner works full time. And he was just talking about that kind of feeling a bit invisible, like, and I definitely recognize that. And I think maybe, again, it probably comes both ways. Like, I feel like I probably keep it moving a little bit more at the school gates and I'm not sort of hanging out to chat. But I think there is definitely that sense of feeling a little bit out on your own.
People and not talking probably, to you.
Yeah, and that probably also comes from men not being able to like find each other in the same way. Like literally this weekend is probably like a case in point. Like Madeline, my wife, was away on a sort of like lovely girls weekend away, and we didn't really like meet up with anyone. Like previously I've met up with other friends and like other dads maybe, and I've gone, oh, let's take the kids somewhere else. And I've probably done that. But I think maybe there is like a bit of a survival mode for a lot of men, like kind of when, you know, when they're kind of, yeah, when they're looking after their kids in that way, like they kind of maybe don't do the legwork socially in that way. And so probably are feeling a little bit more isolated than what they let on, or what we see kind of publicly
I think it's so complicated. Like I think a lot of the conversations I've had with mostly women, and then we've got a few men coming up, that we all have learned so much from what society has shown us, what our parents have shown us, that all these roles, and then we're trying to do it so differently. Like you can't underestimate how differently it is, but we don't know how. We've got no idea. There was a line in your article where you said, where is it? You said, you've got a theory that despite the difficulties of balancing work and home with a new baby, if you compare the home to the office job where you get to go, you know, on your journey on your own, and you have lunch on your own, that men have a pretty good racket going on. And I thought that was really interesting, because it's like, it's that kind of idea of male privilege, which... And it doesn't mean that all the men doing it are shits, but it's like, well, what, you know, I've got friends their partner will say, well, I can't do the drop off pickup because my work won't let me. It's like, but have you really asked? Because
it's
easier not to, isn't it? It's easier to have a row with your partner because she's trying to challenge the status quo. Whereas you're like, well, this is what men do. We go to work and it's so loaded. Like,
yeah, no, completely. And I feel like I definitely had that sense of benefiting from that, you know, even something as little as I've got to be out of the door in the morning at this time, like quite often especially when Dylan was little. Oh, like
leaving this chaos.
Yeah, and the wailing, you'd be able to like hear it from the street, but you're like, I've got to go because I've got to get this train. And it was still a horrible wrench, and I felt really bad, and like I wished that I didn't have to, but I probably did even sense that, okay, well, that demand on me that I have to be in this place at this time because I'm the one who isn't going to stop working, that does kind of insulate you from a lot of it in a way. And you've obviously got stresses, and you've got, you know, the, you know, pressures of finances and providing, professional pressures and stuff, but obviously, you know, women are feeling that just as well, your partner is feeling that just as well, but they're just kind of, you know, in this zone of kind of like being like marooned and stuck at home. And it is funny, I think, like maybe like Madeline is, you know, I knew all this, but she's kind of talking about it a lot more, and I'm kind of getting more of a sense of how difficult it was, like that period. And I do think that there is that thing of you can benefit from something, from a system, without necessarily agreeing with it, and feeling that you kind of, you know, ideologically sit outside it, but you just benefit from it.
It's harder work. We've been talking about it quite a lot, Doug and I. And we've read reading some books, listened to some podcasts, and we've had a really honest conversation. It was like, my life is harder making us more equal. And if I continue to do that, which makes you happier, makes us happier. Like the long-term gain is a bit that I think that when you look at like suicide rates and depression in men, you know, in their 40s and all that, whatever we're doing now isn't working. The longer term... Yeah. If you could have happiness and equality more, perhaps you'd get to that. But it's a big step now, isn't it?
Yeah, there's so much that it feels... I know that there's so many far better informed and smarter people than me kind of working on a lot of this stuff. But it just feels like there's so much that needs to change, like in work and the home and kind of how parents are supported. And I'm really interested to see if there will be any like lasting changes, because I know that the government, for various reasons, are, you know, really pushing hard on people, you know, ditching hybrid working and returning to the office and, you know, getting back into cities and stuff. But, you know, company by company, I know a lot of people that it's very much still they're working a bit from home, they're in sometimes, like, kind of, and I wonder if that will...
We've had a taste of
will
it.
Move, like, the dial a little bit.
Yeah, I think there's definitely... I work quite a bit from home. I've got a warehouse in Gloucestershire, so I go back and forth there. And it is good to get out of the house. Like, that idea of just being home all the time is not good, I don't think.
Yeah. I think so, doing everything in one room. And I think you know, that weird sense of being... you know, carrying on and being really, like, connected and all delivery apps at the tap of a finger or whatever, but just kind of being weirdly isolated and not being out in the world as well. Like, it's going to be, there's something to be said for.
There's a fallout. There's a long fallout. We're not there yet. We don't know what's going
to happen. I know. It's a little bit.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Frightening.
Your lovely mum, who... So she was in one of our Don't Buy Her Flowers ads.
Oh,
Christmas
God,
ads.
Yes, yeah, yeah, she's amazing.
She's brilliant. But you wrote about her trying to teach you over Zoom.
Yes,
how to cook, because you missed that. And you did loads of leftovers and food.
It was food, as you'd imagine, sort of big Nigerian heritage family. It was like a big part of, it's a big part of life anyway, but it was a big part of kind of how we sort of kept each other going, communicated. Like, you know, my mum would cook up a big batch of food and we'd all kind of disperse it among ourselves. And I wrote about, she would look after my kids on Tuesdays. It was Grandma Tuesdays, like after school. Mm. And she'd look after Remy all day, pick up Dylan from school. And like, it was amazing. As I wrote in the article, like I'd come home and the house would just like smell like my childhood home. Mm. Like my mum would be, you know, frying plantain, cooking jollof rice, like kind of making about 7 separate dinners because like the kids didn't like one certain thing. Right. Like she's such a funny mix.
She's such a funny mix
of being like really tough
and
very like formidable but also like massively pandering, and so she was teaching me those recipes over Zoom and I was kind of attempting them and my brothers were as well, and it was this real, you know, not just kind of family connection but cultural connection as well. And it was such a it was a scary kind of reminder of, oh God, like when we're not all around, say, and kind of that link, like my mum is such a big part of that link between the rest of us and this whole history and culture and these traditions and like particularly her grandkids, like, you know, my kids' generation. Yeah, and so it was really nice to kind of to write that and to, and yeah, we definitely felt it. And, you know, I remember going to get her like produce, like when she was isolated, and delivering it to her and stuff like that. And it was kind of, it became the focus and the way that we kind of like kept each other going, and that sort of that sense of being looked after kind of from a distance, like at a remove, was something that I know a lot of people have had various versions of. And people always say, like, you know, just show up with things, like, you know, if people, rather than asking, it kind of goes back to that thing of the dads, doesn't it? Like, it's like, rather than asking what you should do, like, you know, do something, do a kind of like helpful thing, like, you know, put the lasagna on the doorstep or whatever for the person that's isolating. And it seemed like it was really universal, but there was that specific note of, you know, this is, it's a funny thing, I think, when you're kind of, when you're sort of two cultures and two heritages, like, you know, born in this country, but grown up in a very heavily, you know, Black African, West African, Nigerian environment. You sort of feel like for a moment you'll swing one way and you're like, oh yeah, no, I identify with this, with being from Southeast London, and these are the things and my friends and whatever. And then you just have this unbelievable yearning for the languages, the sounds, the smells, you know, everything that you grew up around, and everything that you just kind of have this real deep, profound connection to. So yeah, it was really lovely to make my poor attempts at my mum's jollof and just be like roundly destroyed by my kids, who are like, you know, yeah, it was like the tables had turned, like on the MasterChef judge. They were like, you know, giving me like a, you know, emperor's thumbs down on my jollof because it wasn't as good as grandma's.
It's not brutal. I don't remember like critiquing my mum's cooking.
No, but mine were
like, that bit was a bit dry, and this is what? Yeah.
And I feel like this is the thing that I'm talking to a lot of people about and really feeling at the moment. And you touched on it when you said about, you know, there's the way you were raised and the way that you're trying to raise your children. And quite often there are stark differences, and you've kind of, you're almost like voting on your childhood in this weird way. And you're sort of like, this is what I'm going to do differently. But I find that increasingly, and like, you know, things will probably settle down now, but just in terms of like, you know, you find that you sort of miss your sort of like the respectful discipline that you sometimes had, like when you were growing up. You can just feel a little bit like, like you don't really recognize that form of behavior towards your parents, but then it's natural because that's the way you've raised them. And this is kind of, you can't really have it both ways, can you?
Well, my husband and the older two were away on rugby tour.
Oh, wow.
Weekend, so I was on my own. And then they came back last night and they're broken. Like, no one they were all sleeping in dorms. They'd eaten shite. One of them didn't clean their teeth for 48 hours, which I can't get over. And by last night, by 7:30, I was like, right, everyone's going to bed. And they were just so cross, and everyone was crying. The young one was crying because everyone's come home and it's normal. All three were crying. And I was just like, chaos. But I was just saying to producer B that this morning when they came down, and I said to my son, so do you feel better now for having that long sleep? And she was like, you didn't, that's such a mum thing to say. And he just was like, well, I could have stayed up a bit later. It's so weird, especially that when they're heading to that teenage bit, you're just like, I feel like I've only just come out of that, and I'm 41, it's quite a long time ago. It feels very fresh, like in a way that I don't feel like when my mum and dad were 41. Feel like they were way out of that
age. Yeah, I know what you mean. There probably is like a closing of the gap and a bit more of like cultural crossover and stuff like that. Like Dylan, our eldest, is like very into video games, and so it is strange that he's very into these video games that like I was playing as like a child, and so I know about, and he's a bit sort of like, you know, surprised when I kind of know things. Yeah. Like,
and music is the same as well.
Yeah, so yeah, completely.
Music. Where do you know? But usually it's from bloody TikTok or PS4. There's like Fortnite. So they play the songs. He'll be doing humming a riff. I'm like, that's not even the 80s. How do you?
Yeah.
So weird. It's so weird.
But no, it's I suppose it's that strange thing that you, and I think it's good to actually have conversations about this, like what are we doing? Like, how are we kind of parenting? How are we going to kind of, what's our stance on this thing? Like, I think there's a lot of things that you suddenly realize, you know, you can be in a really close long-term relationship with someone, have kids with them. And, you know, I feel pretty fortunate that Mads and I, there's general sort of overlap in terms of, you know, we agree and we discuss things, but I can imagine there's be like huge divergence in like how you react to something or what's thrown at you, and you know what, you know, hopefully, you know, if there are issues at school or things that you need to deal with, I think it's like just constantly checking in, because I think so much of it is that no one really sits you down and tells you, oh yeah, this is what you do, or they kind of do. And I just remember from my childhood, like, you know, we had a lot of, I'd say that we probably had like a like long leash, like, but like more from necessity than anything else, because my mum worked a lot. Like, you know, she worked in London for the Commonwealth Secretariat, so she worked there, and you know, she had second jobs, she had like night jobs, like for a while, just to sort of try and make ends meet. And so we were just left to our own devices, like. And I've been writing about this a little bit in my book, which, you know, has elements of memoir, and I do remember that there was a lot of it was just kind of modeled sort of behavior, like this is how you act, this is kind of what's expected of you. But, you know, there wasn't too much of the sitting down and this is kind of, you know, or talking about your problems. And I think actually, you know, I talk to like my cousins, I talk to my brothers and stuff, and I think there's a real generation, and, you know, particularly I'd say within like my culture, of people just not really talking about things, like, you know, things that have happened to you, like things that are kind of maybe traumatic, whether to do with like issues of racism or things you've encountered with police or whatever. And you just, in the people that I've spoken to throughout the course of doing this book, there are so many people that say they just didn't want to say to their parents because there was this kind of barrier, like that was like necessary, but kind of they just didn't really want to kind of talk about that stuff. And they sort of, and you almost end up with two versions of yourself kind of thing, and sort of like which has its own issues. And I think probably everyone, you know, has a degree of that, don't they, where they're kind of, you're one person at school and out in the world and another person kind of at home. And so that can bring its own confusions and difficulties.
Yeah, but that must have been hardcore for your mum, like working.
With three kids.
She must
boys,
be very proud of you all now.
Yeah, oh, she's immensely proud. She's immensely proud. But I do massively credit her with who we are and kind of who I am and being on this path and doing this work and stuff. It was just, you know, I don't know exactly what she did, but she definitely did something right in terms of like how we were raised and how we kind of treated people and kind of in terms of being sort of very focused on school and education. And yeah, like my mum now, you know, she's like, I don't understand half the words you say in your articles and your columns. Like, she's like, I just, all those words you use, I don't know where they come from. But I think,
oh, it's brilliant,
you know,
it's so poetic. I love reading some of your reviews.
But it was, you know, I do think it, you know, it is, even though maybe indirectly, but it is, you know, it is her. Like, she really kind of, she had like really sort of high expectations of us, and I think we just kind of absorbed that and just so like expected a bit more for ourselves, which is not to say that we're in any sense perfect or whatever, but I just feel like that is the thing that
I think that's
I'm really grateful for. Yeah,
I've seen it with friends, like where the difference of friends whose parents had no expectation and the ones who did, and some of them have actually ended up kind of finding that expectation later in life where they've realized that they're actually really good at something. But there's a bit of like, well, I could have been doing this for years and no one believed in me or kind of pushed me or.
Yeah. And also that kind of like non-nuclear family, which I think is like really interesting. And I think, you know, again, like as families naturally, like, you know, people separate or, you know, other situations arise or you know, that families change shape, like maybe, and I see that happen with like friends and people that I know. But like, you know, like my eldest brother Ray was almost more like between brother and parent in some ways and dad, because he was that kind of, you know, father figure in some ways, in that he would like come and watch my football games and things like that. And then, you know, my mum's there and she's kind of both as well. Like I've always thought actually that, like, you know, obviously there's a lot that you probably miss out on in terms of not having like a male role model that's kind of like there when you're growing up. But I actually feel like maybe some of the stuff that I missed out on, it's not that bad that I missed out on it. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I didn't have that, like, this is how to be a man and this is what's expected of you. I didn't sort of have any of that kind of like wrongheadedness, or, well, what I would call wrongheadedness now. Like that misguided kind of like, here's what you need to do. And I had little flickers of it from like uncles and maybe like other people and things like that. And I just kind of, it's never been the sort of thing that I would like respond to. And I think, you know, a lot, you know, it was this kind of like mostly this kind of matriarchy really that I was raised in.
But and then you've mentioned that 2020 and 2021 in loads of ways were utterly shite for lots of people, but career-wise you've loads of things have happened for you
that
have obviously been building. I think with the of the chief restaurant critic role at the Standard, you said, oh, this is a job I've been preparing for almost all my life.
It suddenly happened.
That must have felt great, but
No, it did. Yeah, it felt surreal. It felt weird. I think, you know, like everyone, the initial reaction was just kind of like panic, like particularly writing about restaurants when restaurants were like closed. Indefinitely closed.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that like had me in good stead was that, you know, food has come to the fore in recent years, but I've always written about various things, like, you know, like the as the Swedish parenting feature showed. So I always had like a real broad range of like contacts and interests, and, you know, in music and film and TV and other parts of the arts and things like that. So kind of, and there was other stuff to write about food that wasn't related to restaurants. And I think it was a couple of things. I think that obviously things were kind of starting to happen from kind of 2018 onwards, from the time I became the restaurant critic for ES magazine before I moved over to the paper in early 2021. Things were starting to happen, but I think also just that kind of terror of those early months and being like, what the hell am I going to do in 2020? I did just like really kick things into gear, and the book Settlers was kind of in discussion. It hadn't yet been commissioned, but then it got commissioned that summer. I wrote for GQ for the first time, or a John Boyega piece that went crazy, like went everywhere. I wrote that piece for The Guardian, and it was just kind of like momentum, really.
Well, and the I wanted to ask you about, so with the Great Cookbook Challenge,
yes,
because the winner Dominique,
yes,
we stock a couple of her products, and awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah, so actually Dominique gave me some of the Wolf's Kitchen, is it?
Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah,
her products, and yeah, they were really good, like the nuts and everything. And I guess Dominique is just clearly such a driven person. I didn't realize it was a relatively new business, so that was a kind of lockdown business, and it was actually a running theme from a lot of the contestants on the Great Cookbook Challenge, that they had a little bit of a passion for food, or they'd had a long-standing ambition, but a lot of them, their kind of their cookbook ideas and their sense that it was something they wanted to do had really been crystallized by the pandemic,
right?
Cooking at home, experimenting,
having
that
time
kind of feeling,
probably, that
having
time
yeah, having that space, yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, we talk about the ways in which, you know, the huge kind of social shifts and changes are going to manifest. It probably is, a lot of it is that kind of that personal kind of, you know, retraining, you know, businesses kind of, you know, industries kind of collapsing and people thinking, oh, do you know what, actually I don't want to do that anymore. It's something that's been an issue in the hospitality sector, because they're still struggling to get staff, like, not just because of Brexit, but because I think a lot of people took a look at these quite difficult, you know, long hours, difficult lives that they had, and jobs that they weren't necessarily maybe enjoying. You know, there's also the tug of like connection to family wherever they may be in the world, and I think a lot of people, it just kind of, it was this kind of penny dropping thing.
I think people went one of two ways. You either were like we were really lucky at Don't Buy Her Flowers and it went off
as soon as
it was, as kind of lockdowns were announced,
because it's so the kind of business that people are kind of
looking
basically
for.
Founding now it was kind of like, you know,
so we were like, but my focus was on work and it was really busy, whereas I think some people had that at the beginning. And then some people were like cracked at the beginning and were just like, oh God, this is going to be terrible. And everyone kind of had their moment basically at some point. It could have been early on, it could have been late, but
yeah.
But the, with the TV stuff, I want to know, how many meals do you have to eat? So if it's a 3-course meal.
Yeah.
So say you're doing the judging on MasterChef. Which is an amazing gig. Like, that is such a cool thing to be doing.
It is always good fun as well. It's good fun to do.
How much do they space it out? And do you eat the whole plate?
Don't always eat the whole plate. But here's the thing. Sometimes, you, like, there's a real delay before, like, the first one comes out. Right. And so, you know, whether you've been sitting there for a while and you've been filming kind of, like, I don't know, the walk-in shot, or you've been doing to-camera pieces about what you're expecting for the day, sometimes you can just be like absolutely starving by the time something comes, and if it's good, you'll absolutely demolish it. And then by the time, like, you know, the 8th course of the day rolls around, you've gone too big too early and you've kind of barely got time for it. So I think you do need to pace yourself. It's advice that I sort of try to remember but don't always take, like, you know, to just have a little bit and sort of keep in mind that there's going to be, like, you know, 4 more of these. But I think it's always a mark of a really good dish when, you know, even though you know it's possibly going to ruin you for the rest of the day, you know, quite often, you know, I'm coming back from those, you know, almost have to be like rolled into a car and sort of driven home, and I'm almost like, it's like a sort of Christmas Day levels of like biliousness, but it is really good fun. It can feel like a wedding dinner sometimes or something, because obviously the other critics, I see them now and again, but that is kind of the only time we see each other, and it's that strange thing of people that you're professionally maybe a little bit circumspect around it, because you're each kind of like doing your own thing, but it's really fun to be together because they kind of get it as well. They understand it. You're talking about the restaurants you've been to. There's a lot of hail of gossip.
Well, the industry must be actually quite small, right? So doing your job, and then also
And I'm, you know, I'm in so many ways the kind of new kid on the block in some ways, because, you know, there's no, it's, you know, I think like, as people have joked in the past, like, these are the jobs that, you know, someone has to die basically for there to be like a bit of movement. It's kind of, you know, they're jobs that, you know, in the traditional sense and to their detriment, to be honest, like, have quite often just been these kind of permanent fixtures where people are just kind of like barnacled to the position. So I still do feel that kind of like new kid thing.
And do your friends and family fight over who gets, do you get to take someone with you most of the time when you're going out?
Yeah, most of the time I do. Yeah. Sometimes I'll go on my own, just kind of convenience, or, and here's the secret, it's harder than you think to find people to like go with you. Really? I'm sure that will have like people screaming saying like, yeah, oh, yeah. I'll come. But weirdly, I don't know, maybe like early on, my friends and family were like really excited about it. And they still are a little bit, but it's not got the same sort of, you know, pull that it once had where I'm like, oh, does anyone fancy this restaurant? Yeah. And obviously I have to go so frequently.
Because you've got a review every week, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so, and one thing that Faye Mashley used to do that I've tried to do, it's not always possible, but I've tried to do, is go more than once as well, just to kind of, you know, if possible, see a restaurant in the daytime and see it in the evening.
I suppose, especially because there are staffing issues and stuff.
Sometimes you can have an absolute shocker, sometimes it can be better. Sometimes you go there, it's bad, and then you go again, and it's just as bad. Like, kind of, it's So I do try to do that, and so yeah, I'm going at least, you know, a couple of times a week, two or three times a week.
And do restaurants know you're coming? Do they recognise you and know it's
They
you?
Don't know in advance, hopefully. Right. Although, you know, sometimes I think word will get out and, you know, restaurants have like online booking systems now where I think if you were so inclined, you could probably check and dig in. There's probably some algorithmic trail or something. There's all sorts of rumours about them sort of tipping people off. But that's fine. I genuinely, I think as I'm not anonymous and increasingly getting less and less anonymous, it kind of, you know, it starts to feel a bit absurd, really, the whole kind of pageantry and cloak and dagger of it. Like, I like it to be that they don't know that I'm coming. So sometimes I won't necessarily book. If I think there's somewhere that I can just like slip in kind of on a walk-in, I'll just show up. And generally, I think they don't know until I arrive. But, you know, it can be a battle sometimes just to get the non-preferential treatment. You'd be surprised, though. I think sometimes places are so busy, you know, there's all these stories of, you know, they've got pictures of critics kind of in the staff room, like, you know, possibly on a dartboard, at restaurants. But you'd be surprised. Like, quite often I will go in, and just because it's a busy service and, you know, a certain person or a manager isn't on the floor, like, they don't know who I am. Like, no one really kind of knows who I am. Like, I think you can still catch them. It's getting kind of rarer and rarer, but you can still occasionally kind of go relatively undercover. But I just don't think, you know, because, you know, in like the US, like, you know, there's anonymous food critics and they kind of, you know, they go out in like, you know, wigs and like sunglasses and stuff and like, you know, sort of disguises, and it's this real dance of kind of, you know credit cards in different names and all this stuff and this kind of spy act.
Oh, like, that would have made it more fun, though. You should have
gone. I mean, there's an element of that. But then equally, I just feel like, wow, it's quite high stakes for what is ultimately just sort of writing about your dinner kind of thing. Like, it's quite,
And I've interviewed loads of women who've all talked about this, like, feeling of overwhelm and spinning plates and all that stuff. So it sounds like that you something that you do feel, like, how does it feel when you're in that zone, and how, what do you do to kind of try and mitigate it?
I definitely, and that was the kind of the flip side of having such a kind of professionally fantastic, like a period that was so like great professionally, but was really intense, and you know, going from one thing to another, and it really did feel like everything was happening at once, whether it was, you know, doing the Waitrose podcast that I hosted and really loved hosting, but had to kind of step away from because of the book, getting offered.
Is that because there was so much going on, you had to go, I can't do this one?
Yeah. So that's an example, I think, where I just had to be honest, and I just kind of, I could see that other work and everything else was going to like suffer, and I just, you know, I just wasn't going to be able to write this book to the best of my ability unless I kind of stepped away from something. And it was a really difficult decision, because I really enjoyed it. It was a great thing to do. It was a great job, speaking to like amazing people, you know, Andy Oliver, Heston Blumenthal, Yeah, all sorts, really. But yeah, I think in a weird way, you know, it's that thing of if I stepped back from that, but then, you know, round the corner, the cookbook challenge thing came. And so it's that strange thing of, I think sometimes you don't really know. And I think it's just good to like, try to like manage workload and sanity. And yeah, like from my point of view, I do occasionally have that feeling of just like lurching from one thing to the next, yeah. and maybe being spread a little bit too thin. And I think it's not just work, it's like family responsibilities, like kind of, oh, you know, I've got to go to this thing. Oh, I need to see my mum. It's been a little while since I've seen her. Oh, I've got this thing that a friend needs me to show up for. Like, oh, the kids need this doing. Like, you know, there is a lot of that. Mm. There is a lot of that pressure. And I imagine that it's something that a lot of people feel. Generally, I kind of need to just like take a pause and like do some exercise or something, or do yeah. something like that's away from it all and like fun. I think you can just get so just sucked into like, you know, always being on and your phone and email and yeah. always being contactable and stuff.
And
as
success
well.
Means that we just keep building up and up and up. And it's like, well, actually, success might be. Just put this like,
and I think actually success in various fields can bring kind of like comparison and like, oh no, like I've got to do what this person's doing or whatever. And if you reach a high point, like, you know, I won like a couple of awards mm. last year, yeah. and then you're like, oh wow, the only way is down from there, really. Like, unless you sort of like, you know, win them again, like, but I feel actually that I don't know, I feel just like really contented, like it's already in terms of like accolades and things like that. I never thought I'd, you know, in the time when I was like a lifestyle journalist, like a features journalist, mm. you know, I'd really desperately craved that stuff and craved like awards and things like that, and I was just never really in the frame for them. And I think having come through to entering like the world of food writing and food media, and obviously that stuff's happened, it's just really nice. But I hopefully don't, I maybe have to remind myself, you don't put too much stock in it, because really I feel like I remember and recognize the flip side, where you feel like you're still doing good work, but you're not necessarily being recognized for it yeah. in the same way. Yeah, yeah, you're not getting the recognition, but that doesn't make the work any less.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I'm just kind of trying to have those conversations with myself and think about what it is that I really want to do, what is too much in terms of a time investment, what's going to kind of impinge on like my happiness, on my family's happiness, on like, you know, I've got loads of things that I'd like to do. I just kind of want to make sure that I do them in the right way and at the mm. right pace. That's definitely something that I've kind of come out of this period feeling, that I just kind of want to make sure that I don't sort of, you know, well, absolutely destroy
yeah,
myself
yeah, yeah.
in the process.
Yourself and your family, yeah, it's all, yeah. it all has to be considered, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Awesome. Oh, it's yeah. exciting. Well, I'm excited for you with the book.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, I'm really, it's, yeah, it's at that point now where it was kind of like people were almost like wincing as they said it, like, how's the book? Because it was this thing that was like really, you know, taking a lot out of me. But yeah, I'm at that point now where it is, you know, exists. I'm really proud of it. I think it's, obviously it's specifically about, you know, the culture that I grew up in, but I think there's parallels, and it's about, you know, if you've been to a city like London or to the UK, you know that there's all sorts of stories like overlaying each other, like immigrant stories, whether it's like Irish community, Jewish community. And I feel like it's a, yeah, it's a story about that really. And about kind of the different ways that a specific group has kind of tried to thrive, tried to prosper, tried to kind of escape some of the circumstances that were kind of set for them, and where that might lead in the future, and where my story fits into that. And yes, it's good fun as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jimmy.
No worries at all. Thanks, Steph.
I love speaking with Jimmy. I'm finding it so interesting to talk to some men for the podcast, actually, and be able to
talk quite honestly about the challenges of having kids, trying to juggle this rush hour with work and family. It's also quite heartening to speak to men who've got some views on how fatherhood has changed. So it doesn't feel like it's just women sitting here thinking, God, this is tough. How do we navigate this? Massive thanks to Jimmy for being really open. We have Matt Coyne, aka Man vs. Baby, coming up in our next episode. And if you subscribe to the podcast, you'll get a ping when that goes live. Also, if you're enjoying the podcast, I would love it if you could leave a review and rate the podcast. We've had so much feedback, in particular on the sex and the relationship episode, and it's just lovely to receive it. I think otherwise you could feel like you're just speaking to, I don't know, my cats who are watching me as I speak now. Right, I'm going to get back to my gin and tonic. There it is. It's a bit empty. But thank you. I hope you have a lovely Jubilee weekend if you're still in the Jubilee weekend, and just a lovely week. Thanks for listening.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.